Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. We have got some wet and wild weather with an atmospheric river moving across our region. We'll have details on our show today. Congress has voted to end the federal shutdown, and President Trump has signed the measure. Find out what the deal contained on our show today and how your representatives voted. From 2025 Talks, we'll have more details on the federal government reopening, as well as the next battle looming over a farm bill extension and more national news. Here in East County, the Grossmont Union High School District Board majority has rejected a proposal to protect students from immigration raids on campus. Learn more on our show today. The FDA has issued a health alert over infant formula that's been recalled due to botulism, a potentially fatal illness. Healthcare access and affordability are major issues in the California governor's race. Today we'll have views from four leading candidates on how they would address the healthcare crisis amid federal cuts and the likely failure of Congress to extend Affordable Health Care Act credits by year's end. On Green Scene, a new United Nations report warns of the highest CO2 emission levels since the dawn of civilization. Governor Newsom is attending a global climate change summit that President Trump refused to attend. Hear what California's governor is promising to help combat climate change and some other key announcements to address climate change made at the summit. San Diego County supervisors on Wednesday will be holding a hearing on the future of housing in the unincorporated areas, with an eye specifically on how to enable more housing construction in Spring Valley, Casa de Oro, and Lakeside to address the housing affordability crisis and state mandates. San Diego County held a grand opening on a new inpatient psychiatric facility, the first funded by our county, to help people with mental health conditions, including homeless individuals, get health care, not handcuffs. California Attorney General Rob Bonta has some tips on how to avoid scams targeting military veterans and their families. Caltrans has implemented parking restrictions in Descanso, drawing objections from business owners and some residents. Grossmont Healthcare District has a new chief executive officer, plus the county wants residents' input on a proposed transportation plan for Lakeside. With Thanksgiving just around the corner, we'll be talking turkey today with some turkey safety tips. And on Crime Beat, hear about hefty bail set for a hit-and-run driver who killed a 12-year-old and how El Cajon police and a voluntary cold case team helped identify a decades-old homicide victim. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. An atmospheric river has brought a major storm that's moving across San Diego County. By Monday, the storm is expected to have dumped 2 to 6 inches of rain in our mountain areas, up to 4 inches in valleys and coastal areas, and up to 2 inches in the desert. Now, as of our show taping deadline, most of San Diego County is under a flash flood warning on Friday afternoon. The county is urging people to prepare for the deluge. Sandbags are available at many county fire stations while supplies last. Be sure to bring a shovel and call ahead. Use caution when driving on rain-slicked roadways where visibility may be limited and roads slippery. Even after the weekend, more rain is possible early next week, so keep your umbrellas handy. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is John Tidwell with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. President Trump has signed a bill to reopen the federal government and end the government shutdown that has gone on for 43 days, sidelined federal workers, delayed food aid, and snarled air travel. The deal has drawn criticism for failing to assure extension of Affordable Health Care Act premiums, which Republicans have held the line against. Several Senate Democrats ultimately gave in to end the shutdown. Democrats settled for a promise that the Senate would vote on a bill to extend the subsidies by the end of the second week of December, but there's no assurance that either the Senate or House would pass the measure. Health experts estimate that Americans shopping for 2026 Obamacare health insurance plans are facing more than doubling of monthly premiums on average as a result. Democrats did get some concessions in the compromise measure. NBC News reports that the agreement contains three full-year appropriations bills that will fund certain departments, such as the U.S. Department of Agriculture, through the end of the fiscal year next fall. The agreement includes a continuing resolution to fund the rest of the government at existing spending levels through January 30th, and to fully fund the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, through next September. The Trump administration halted SNAP payments on November 1st, even asking the Supreme Court to prohibit states from making payments for SNAP recipients to afford food. Reuters reports that the bill would also prohibit federal agencies from firing employees until January 30th, which would stall Trump's campaign to further downsize the federal workforce. About 2.2 million civilians worked for the federal government at the start of Trump's second term, according to federal records, but 300,000 employees are expected to leave the government by the end of this year due to Trump's downsizing effort. Both of California Senators Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff voted against the agreement. Padilla says this does nothing to stop the Republican-made health care crisis. It does nothing to stop premiums from doubling for millions of Americans. Schiff says the bill had nothing to bring down the costs of care or extend health care tax credits. He adds that the fight is over lowering health care costs for 24 million Americans after Republicans' recent budget bill, quote, took billions and billions of dollars out of Medicaid to give tax cuts for wealthy people and corporations. In the House, San Diego's four Democratic members voted against the measure, while Republican Daryl Issa voted in favor.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to 2025 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
Whether it is men and women who work at Air Force Base in Omaha that live in our state on the western part, folks who live and work in Iowa who work at the Rock Island Arsenal, or our VA facilities around the state.
Iowa AFL-CIO President Charlie Wishman is grateful federal employees are going back to work now that the government is reopening. The record 43-day shutdown has been resolved with funding approved for most agencies until January 30th. Some federal employees will see benefits from sticking out the shutdown. Most staff will get back pay in a few days, but Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says TSA agents will get a $10,000 bonus for working when the government was closed.
We are going to not only continue their paychecks like they should have received all along, but also they're going to get a bonus check for stepping up, taking on extra shifts, for showing up each and every day, for serving the American people.
Air travel disruptions grew during the shutdown's final days, with TSA agents and air traffic controllers missing paychecks and calling in sick. Democrats are objecting to a provision added to the funding deal to let Republican senators sue over having their phones searched after January 6th. Only one of the eight who might legally collect hundreds of thousands of dollars has expressed any interest in suing over phone record investigations by then-special counsel Jack Smith. Agriculture is one federal department getting full-year appropriations, but Congress reauthorized the 2018 Farm Bill with some important cuts. Mike Lavender with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says programs for things like soil health have been cut and restructured, giving corporate farms more access to those funds, shutting out smaller family farms. And he says communities will not be helped by programs designed and funded at levels from almost a decade ago.
We all know issues in rural communities, farm country, urban communities. We have to have those conversations in the context of a full Farm Bill, because that's how important they are. We have to give them that time, and these year extensions do not give us the space to do that.
The deal to end the shutdown is sparking Democratic infighting. Maryland Democratic Representative Johnny Olszewski says he voted against it because it lacked a firm commitment to extend ACA subsidies that had lowered the cost of health insurance on the exchange.
We're talking about a $4,700 tax increase for the average family of four in Maryland. That is devastating for a working family.
Healthcare workers are urging private hospitals to step up funding for patient care in light of ACA changes and federal healthcare cuts. Some private hospitals have announced they're cutting staff to blunt the impact of Medicare and Medicaid reductions, despite many of them having robust budget reserves and making sizable investments in big tech. Dinesh Forbes is a registered nurse in Mount Sinai's intensive care unit. She says there is a risk in using technology to replace nursing staff.
Staffing issues have always been ongoing, but now we're seeing they do want to use other machinery to watch patients, to care for their safety, which is not working because we still need to be there.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
Grossmont Union High School District's conservative board majority has rejected a resolution proposed by trustee Chris Veit. It would have offered protection to vulnerable students and their families facing potential immigration enforcement on school campuses. The motion died without a second. Veit's proposed resolution, titled "A Welcoming District for All Students," would have prohibited school staff from assisting ICE or allowing ICE access to district facilities without a warrant, provided resources and training to teachers, administrators, and staff on immigration issues, including how to respond to requests from immigration officers to visit a school or access a student. It also would have required all visitors, including immigration officers, to register upon entering school grounds and provide proof of their identity. It would have required that a student's parents or guardian be notified immediately if an ICE officer seeks access unless a warrant prohibits disclosure, prohibited staff from collecting citizenship or immigration status of students, and required staff to report presence of any immigration enforcement officers to campus police and administrators. In addition, the measure would have provided resources for families, a website and hotline on immigration issues, required the district to advocate at state and federal levels to support deferred action for childhood arrivals or DACA students, temporary protective status and refugee resettlement programs, and to oppose policies that erode civil rights protections. Trustee Veit is known for proposing resolutions aimed at generating safe and welcoming environments for all students and staff, specifically rejecting discrimination and harassment. His proposal aimed to support students of all immigration statuses while assuring that the district adhered to state law, AB 49, which mandates that districts not cooperate with ICE agents without a legal warrant. News reports from other San Diego area districts state that there have been no confirmed reports of ICE presence on their campuses since those districts enacted proactive policies to not cooperate with ICE without legal mandates. The Grossmont District encompasses 17 schools in East County and serves over 22,000 students. Over 44% of those are Latino or Hispanic. Recently, the Department of Homeland Security has been awarded $170 billion in taxpayer funding funneled towards deportation of immigrants, as well as detention and, at times, harassment and even abuse of both immigrants and citizens. The Trump administration has lifted a ban under prior administrations to now allow immigration enforcement even in sensitive locations, including schools, churches, and hospitals. Community members in the audience were not satisfied with the Grossmont Board's decision to reject Veit's resolution that would have protected children in school from ICE regardless of their immigration status. David Dan said his three children's mother is an immigrant. He voiced concerns over ICE racially profiling people and said the district has no plan if ICE comes to check on his family. He called the resolution something we could all get behind. Ilka Weston, a longtime homelessness activist, emphasized that letting ICE agents onto campus or even near our schools is equivalent to a shooter. We're supposed to respect law enforcement, she said, and right now, what is going on with the ICE agents is causing fear and PTSD with students as well as parents because of their children. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is John Tidwell with a health alert. County health officials are warning parents, caregivers, and retailers to throw out ByHeart Whole Nutrition Infant Formula. This includes all lots, can sizes, and single-serve anywhere sticks. As of November 10th, the formula is linked to 15 nationwide cases of infant botulism. All 15 infants were hospitalized with no deaths reported. While California has had two cases, none have been reported in San Diego County. ByHeart, the maker of the formula, issued a voluntary product recall on November 8th on certain lots, but expanded the recall to all ByHeart formula on November 11th. The formula under recall is typically sold online and at major retailers. The County Department of Environmental Health and Quality has been working this week with local retailers to ensure the product is no longer on the shelves. If you have any unopened ByHeart formula at home, please throw it away and do not use it. Parents or caregivers with an infant experiencing symptoms after being fed ByHeart formula should seek medical attention immediately. If your infant has already taken some of this formula and you still have the open container, the FDA recommends to photograph information on the package, including brand and lot number, seal it, label it, do not use, and store for 30 days in case there is a need for health officials to test the formula. Infant botulism is a rare but serious illness that is a medical emergency. It primarily affects babies younger than 6 months and is caused by a toxin that attacks the body's nerves and causes difficulty breathing, muscle paralysis, and even death. Signs and symptoms can show up as early as 3 days after exposure, but usually take 10 to 30 days. They include constipation and neurologic symptoms, such as poor feeding, weak crying, loss of head control, and difficulty swallowing. To more fully alert the local medical community, county public health officials issued a California Health Alert Network for San Diego County. Public health officials are working with healthcare providers regionally to watch for signs of initial botulism and report any suspected cases to the California Department of Public Health and the county's epidemiology unit.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
What will California's next governor do about health care? 4 Democrats in the race say answering the Trump administration's cuts and making care affordable is important, but they disagree about how to pay for that, CalMatters reports. Every day, Californians struggle to afford medications or wait weeks or months for mental health appointments. Thousands in the sandwich generation juggle caring for elderly parents while raising children. Those are top healthcare issues Californians want to see the next governor address, according to a recent poll. The candidates vying to succeed Governor Gavin Newsom offered views on healthcare and addressed the Trump administration's coming cuts to safety net programs at a recent forum at UC Riverside organized by philanthropic foundations. Richard Tate, president and CEO of the California Wellness Foundation, one of the groups sponsoring the event, says the reality is too many Californians face barriers to health and wellness in our state. 4 candidates, all Democrats, took part in the forum. Former U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Javier Becerra, State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurmond, former Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, and former State Controller Betty Yee all agreed that state responses to federal cuts will require them to push for efficiency in the healthcare system and look for new sources of revenue. They disagreed, however, on how to fund the state's response. To better understand the healthcare issues in the gubernatorial race, CalMatters also reached out to frontrunners not in attendance, former Congresswoman Katie Porter, Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco, and former Fox News host Steve Hilton. All 3 polled well in a recent California Wellness Foundation survey, but none of them returned interview requests or answered questions about their health policy, priorities, or vision by the deadline. If elected, Javier Becerra pledges to be the state's health care governor, a title that Governor Gavin Newsom also often embraced. Becerra touted his experience responding to a public health emergency and negotiating lower drug prices in President Biden's cabinet. He did so for medications such as blood thinners, diabetes, drugs, and others as part of a Medicare drug negotiations program while serving as Secretary of Health and Human Services at the federal level. And as a former state attorney general, he sued the previous Trump administration 123 times. He positioned himself as a strong opponent to federal cutbacks in health. Becerra said, "We will not take a knee to what Donald Trump has done to health care. We will not go backwards." An estimated 3.4 million Californians will lose coverage as a result of the Trump administration's cuts to the Medicaid program approved in this year's federal spending plan. And if Congress does not renew the enhanced premium subsidies for the Affordable Care Act by the end of the year, another 400,000 who buy health plans through Covered California could be priced out of the market. Filling those gaps is a tall order for the state, but Becerra says it's worth reviewing the tax code to make sure billionaires are paying their fair share to help fund the safety net. He believes spending should be prioritized on preventive care and on keeping people well in the first place. Becerra concludes, "We need to provide for people at the front door, not in the emergency room." Among Tony Thurmond's boldest visions is that of creating a state-run single-payer system where a public entity handles healthcare financing, acting as insurer, paying providers, and covering medical costs for all. That's an idea once floated by Newsom, but abandoned because of its expense and complexity. Thurmond says his support of a single-payer system stems from watching his brother die from a rare liver disease.
His brother couldn't afford health insurance, he says, and stopped going to the doctor even though he was sick. But a system like that would take years to set up, hundreds of billions of dollars, and would also require federal approval. More immediately, Thurman says, he'd seek legislation to expand requirements for employers to provide quality health care to their workers. He says, "We have many employers in this state who require their employees to get health care through public assistance, and if you do that as an employer, you're going to be held to account. On the flip side, if you're doing the right thing," he says, "we'll reward you with tax credits." Like Becerra, Thurmond also supports the idea of taxing the wealthy to increase funding for health care. If elected, he pledged to work with Congress to restore the cuts to Medicaid and other safety net programs that the Trump administration made in its most recent federal spending plan. Antonio Villaraigosa says he wants to go back to basics. In a state budget, that means prioritizing public safety, health care, and education in that order, the former Los Angeles mayor says. Villaraigosa pitches himself as more pragmatic than his opponents. He does not support a single-payer system. He argues that it's unrealistic because the state can't afford the upfront costs and because the Trump administration, which would need to approve such plans, would reject it. State response to a federal administration that is gutting the safety net, he says, will require innovative solutions and a health care system that is more efficient. What exactly that would look like is yet to be determined. Villaraigosa adds, "I'm not going to sell you snake oil. It's going to be tough to provide that care, but I'm absolutely committed to it." Alone among the forum participants, Villaraigosa was less interested in increasing taxes to create more revenue, sidestepping the question and only saying he'd like to look for ways to grow the pie. "We already have the highest taxes in the United States of America and the highest cost of living," he says. But like his opponents, Villaraigosa wants to grow the mental health workforce. "To do so, you have to incentivize people with adequate pay," he says. "The issue is access because people can't get to a doctor to give them care when they get $7 for that visit," he says. Betty Yee, a former state controller, wants to be an accountability governor. Like her opponents, Yee lists improving mental health access as a high priority. "Part of the reason California struggles to find appropriate care," she says, "is because regulatory agencies aren't robustly enforcing the state's mental health parity law, which requires insurers to cover physical and mental health conditions equally." Yee says, "We are not looking at our health systems in terms of whether they are continuing to build a robust provider network to deal with mental health for our diverse populations, so we actually need some better oversight with respect to what is currently the law here in California." Yee is an advocate for growing what's working. Anti-poverty programs, such as the Earned Income Tax Credit and the Young Child Tax Credit, have been successful in putting extra dollars in the pockets of low-income Californians, she believes. She wants to expand these refundable tax credit programs to help alleviate some of the financial burden for caregivers, especially those in the sandwich generation. Yee says California cannot replace federal cuts with borrowing alone, so she supports raising taxes for the highest earners to fund the safety net. But first, she wants to make sure that we're making the case that we're making our healthcare system much more efficient to have a much better shot at increasing access and affordability for Californians. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Heat-trapping carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere jumped by the highest amount on record last year, soaring to levels never seen in human civilization. That's turbocharging the Earth's climate and causing more extreme weather, the United Nations Weather Agency reported on November 12th. The report came just as world leaders convened in Brazil for the United Nations Climate Conference, but U.S. President Donald Trump refused to attend. Trump previously pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord and has taken actions to worsen greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change, such as increasing oil production and eliminating subsidies for solar and wind energy. Trump has called climate change a con job, despite the fact that over 97% of the world's climate scientists believe climate change is real and that man's actions are making it worse. California Governor Gavin Newsom is attending the UN's climate change conference, where he called President Donald Trump an invasive species and a wrecking ball during discussions about the U.S. absence from global climate action, CNN reports. Newsom assured the audience at the climate summit that California will continue to prioritize green technology while blasting Trump's decision to reverse the federal government's course on climate action. The World Meteorological Organization's latest bulletin on greenhouse gases reports that CO2 growth rates have tripled since the 1960s and reached levels not seen in at least 800,000 years. Emissions from burning coal, oil, and gas, along with more wildfires, have fanned a vicious climate cycle. According to the report, people and industries continue to spew heat-trapping gases while the planet's oceans and forests lose their ability to absorb them. The Geneva-based agency says the increase in the global average concentration of CO2 from 2023 to 2024 amounted to the highest annual level of any one-year span since measurements began in 1957, 3.5 parts per million. As oceans warm, climate change fuels more frequent and extreme storms, such as hurricanes. Drier conditions and worse wildfires in the West, melted glaciers, and rising sea levels around the world. These changes have had serious consequences for people and economies globally, such as the Los Angeles fires of January 2025. According to some estimates, those fires could have a final cost of over $100 billion, one of the most expensive weather-related disasters in U.S. history. The U.S. National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration's global data for this year, through June, reveals that carbon dioxide rates are still rising at one of the highest levels on record. Governor Newsom slammed Trump's attacks on the clean energy economy. He says Republicans are ceding the fast-growth market to China, but he pledges that California is going to compete in this space. Newsom was asked about the Trump administration's plan to open California's coast to oil and gas drilling. The governor assures it's never going to happen. Over our dead body, CNN reports. Newsom asked why Trump might be targeting California. He has no interest in opening up oil drilling rigs right off the coast of Florida across the street from Mar-a-Lago, Newsom noted. Democrats have made climate change a central part of their policy priorities. But Newsom, a Democrat, says their messaging needs to change so citizens can connect with the issue on factors like economics and cost. Newsom has helped strengthen California's growing list of international partnerships, which includes Nigeria, Brazil, Denmark, Kenya, Holland, Australia, Canada, China, and Mexico. Although California is just one of 50 U.S. states, its economy is the world's fourth largest, making it a key player in influencing markets and energy policy. California is also home to some of the world's most ambitious climate change policies, including a goal to decarbonize its economy by 2045 and ban sale of new gasoline-powered cars by 2035. Newsom told global leaders that California's partnership on the issue is secure, but, he adds, we can't do that without all of you, so we're here with an open hand, not a closed fist. According to the governor's office, greenhouse gas emissions in California are down 21% since 2000, even as the state's gross domestic product increased 81% in the same time period, showing that addressing climate change can be done without impeding economic growth. Since the beginning of Newsom's administration, battery storage has surged to over 15,000 megawatts. That's a nearly 2,000% increase, and over 30,000 megawatts of new resources added to the electric grid. California also has about 30% of the storage capacity estimated to be needed by 2045 to reach that 100% clean electricity goal. California's presence on the world stage may matter now more than ever, but the state can't substitute for the world's leading superpower. Now, although this is Newsom's first time at the summit, he's previously sent state representatives to every event since he took office. Highlights of the early days of that climate change summit include a Green Digital Action Hub, an AI Climate Institute to help developing nations design their own climate solutions, new commitments to advance climate-resilient food systems, including a $1.45 billion donation from the Gates Foundation to help farmers across sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia adapt to extreme weather, and $30 million raised by the Global Methane Hub to cut methane emissions from rice cultivation. A Beat the Heat implementation drive to protect 3.5 billion people from extreme heat in 185 cities. The Buildings Breakthrough Initiative launched standards for near-zero and resilient buildings. No Organic Waste Plan committed $30 million to cut 30% of methane emissions from organic waste by 2030. The Latin American and Caribbean Water Investment Program announced a $20 billion pipeline for water security by 2030, and an Indigenous adaptation event elevated ancestral knowledge and local governance as essential tools for national and global resilience, with new commitments to finance Indigenous-led projects directly.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
San Diego County supervisors will continue a critical conversation about the future of housing and development in the unincorporated areas of the county, including Spring Valley, Lakeside, and Casa de Oro, among others. On Wednesday, November 19th, supervisors will discuss land use issues with staff presenting info to set the stage for major decisions coming in the 2026-27 fiscal year. These will affect where and how new homes and buildings are built. Housing affordability and availability remain a major crisis across the San Diego region. While the state of housing availability in San Diego County is reportedly tight but easing, the average cost for a home in San Diego County is around $900,000. At the same time, new state laws are pushing the county and cities in the region to address climate change and reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which influence where development should happen and encourages denser, higher development along transit lines. The county needs to figure out how to balance these state requirements with the unique needs and local policies of communities. Several factors are making large housing projects in the unincorporated areas more difficult, including SB 743, which changed how transportation impacts are measured and has created uncertainty for developers, rising interest rates and supply chain challenges, and county regulations and litigation risks slowing down large complex projects, some of which have been blocked by courts for fire safety reasons. A shortage of groundwater supplies is also an issue limiting development in some areas, such as Borrego Springs. The Board of Supervisors is also expected to discuss the San Diego County Development Feasibility Analysis on Wednesday. That analysis focused on four key unincorporated communities to understand specific local challenges and opportunities for housing growth. Three of those are in East County: the Valle de Oro-Casa de Oro area, positioned to attract funding due to its specific plan; Lakeside, where aging and insufficient infrastructure may be a barrier to development; and Spring Valley, an environmental justice community that represents the county's commitment to prioritizing areas disproportionately affected by environmental and socioeconomic challenges. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
A grand opening ceremony was held November 13th at the first ever inpatient psychiatric health facility funded by San Diego County on the grounds of Tri-City Hospital. The facility in Oceanside will offer 16 beds for inpatient short-term psychiatric care and plans to care for 350 to 500 patients each year. Supervisor Jim Desmond says he ran on a promise of getting people off the streets and into treatment, a vision that's now becoming a reality. Here's more of what he has to say.
The psychiatric health facility here at Tri-City Hospital, located on the grounds here, was built by the county. So this is a first of its kind here in San Diego County. 16 beds, you know, desperately needed. We've got crisis stabilization units here in North County. We have three of them. But then where do they go from here? And if they need additional care and additional help, hospital and jail is not the right place for them to go. So this type of facility can house people for up to a week or maybe longer if necessary, where they can get the treatment that they need, so hopefully they can start making better decisions for themselves. Unfortunately, a lot of people that are still on the streets today, they don't want help, and most of them have some type of mental health issue. Now, it could be severe, it could be mild, but what we got now is a facility that they can go to and get that treatment and get that care, and then perhaps they'd be reunited with their families or go to a board and care facility where they can go, so we don't have this revolving door. So we have to build this chain, you know, first of shelters and then crisis stabilization units and then facilities like this. We have to continue with this effort, and we need more board and cares for facilities after this. So I'm really proud that this has happened and opened up here in North County, and the fact that we're part of treatment and care instead of just shelters and then people just being caught in that revolving door.
Psychiatrists, therapists, nurses, and peer support will help stabilize and treat patients. The average stay is expected to run 5 to 7 days. The $27 million medical facility was jointly funded by the county and the Tri-City Healthcare District. The county and the medical center worked together to plan and design the new facility. A long-standing behavioral health care provider for the county, Exodus Recovery, will operate it. The facility adds to the spectrum of specialty services that the county provides to address behavioral health in the region, including mobile crisis response teams and crisis stabilization units. The facility will begin accepting patients in December. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
In honor of Veterans Day, California Attorney General Rob Bonta has issued a consumer alert warning veterans and their families to be aware of scams, including fraud perpetrated by predatory individuals or companies who exploit veterans seeking help to access VA benefits. These unaccredited claim sharks often promise a faster claims process or guaranteed benefit increases. They are not accredited by U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Attorney General Bonta says, honoring our heroes means keeping them safe. He adds, whether a person claims to be from the VA or an offer sounds too good to be true, I urge Californians to triple-check every offer and seek assistance from reliable and accredited channels when in doubt. Our veterans deserve protection as strong as their service. California veterans requiring assistance with initial benefits claims can receive free support from their local county veteran service office or from another VA-accredited representative. Accredited representatives, including attorneys and claims agents certified by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, have passed exams, undergone background checks, and completed ongoing training to ensure that they can assist veterans. If they do not uphold legal standards when representing veterans, these professionals can face penalties, including losing their accreditation. By contrast, unaccredited claims representatives may provide substandard assistance and often charge high fees or may even be committing outright fraud. Here are some common scams targeting veterans. Beware of home loan scams from scammers who, through phone calls or mailers, claim to be affiliated with the government, VA, or your mortgage servicer. These fraudsters may attempt to convince you to agree to loan modifications, refinance your home, or make payments to your loans via untraceable money orders or gift cards. Be cautious of any individual or lender that asks you to pay fees up front before receiving any services, tells you to cancel your mortgage payment and resend the funds elsewhere, make payments to someone other than your current loan servicer, or pressures you to sign papers you haven't had a chance to read thoroughly or that you don't understand, including asking you to sign over the title of your property. Never give out personal information to a lender or servicer that contacts you out of the blue. If you are feeling unsure, hang up and call your loan servicer directly at the number that is listed on your mortgage statement. Report suspicious activity to the California Attorney General or file a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission. Some scammers will pretend to be from the Department of Defense, VA, or other official organizations to get your personal information so that they can commit identity theft or fraud. Always make sure a request is coming from an official organization by doing a quick search on the internet. Never trust the contact information given by the person asking for your personal information, as scammers often give out fake contact information. Be wary of letters and emails that have misspellings, look unprofessional, or send you to a non-government website. Never give out your Social Security number to get military or veteran discounts. If your identity is stolen, put a fraud alert on your credit report by contacting the three main credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, and consider requesting a credit freeze, which will make it difficult for identity thieves to open new accounts in your name. Report identity theft right away and get a recovery plan at identitytheft.gov. File a police report with your local sheriff or police department and keep a copy for your records. Pension scams are another tool deployed by con artists. Veterans 65 and over are targeted by financial advisors, persuading them to buy costly annuities, transfer their assets into trusts, or pay unnecessary fees to help with a veteran's pension application. These advisors claim to help veterans qualify for aid and attendance or other veterans' benefits, but may cause them to actually lose eligibility to access to pension or health benefits. Only the VA can award benefits. If you are interested in aid and attendance benefits, get free help from your county Veterans Service office. Affinity fraud is yet another tactic. Scammers pose as fellow veterans or service members in order to appear trustworthy. Companies may use military-sounding names, military or veteran service organization seals, or other patriotic symbols to gain your trust. They may also advertise in military newspapers or magazines, use pictures of service members, or hire salespeople with a military background. Don't be pressured into buying anything before you have a chance to shop around and do your own research. There are also predatory schools that target veterans. The GI Bill and other military education programs offer veterans and their families a chance to attend school and further their education. Predatory schools often use high-pressure sales calls to try to get service members and veterans to sign up. Always ask for information about the programs, such as graduation rates, job placement, and graduate salary information. Take as much time as you need when making a decision. If a school can't provide this basic information, they could be hiding something. For information on California's public universities and community colleges, go to universityofcalifornia.edu or calstate.edu. And for more information on California community colleges, visit cccco.edu. If you believe you have been the victim or target of a scam, immediately contact your local police department and file a complaint with California's Office of the Attorney General. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Caltrans has removed two-thirds of the parking spaces in front of Descanso Junction Restaurant and nearby businesses along State Route 94 in Descanso in late October, sparking anger among local business owners and some residents. The State Transportation Agency removed angled parking spaces, replacing them with far fewer parallel spots. The speed limit has also been reduced along that stretch of highway from 55 to 45 miles an hour. The highway leads to Guate, Pine Valley, Cuyamaca, Mount Laguna, Julian, and other backcountry mountain communities. In addition, signs were installed on the shoulders to remind motorists that parking is never allowed on the state highway shoulder except for emergency situations and emergency vehicles, though it's long been done in Descanso, where parking is very limited. Caltrans says the changes were made due to a January 2021 traffic accident resulting in serious injuries that occurred at Descanso Junction when a vehicle traveling south on State Route 79 struck two teenage pedestrians. Aaron Hunter, spokesman for Caltrans, told East County Magazine that in a subsequent court case, the plaintiff alleged that parking on both sides of the roadway and vehicles backing out from parking spaces contributed to dangerous conditions. He adds, this incident added a high level of urgency for safety and remedial measures. John Elliott, the owner of Descanso Trading Post across the highway from Descanso Junction, had six parking spaces in front of his business, and now he has just two. He says the designated scenic highway now looks like hell. He is angry that Caltrans failed to work with the community to address concerns, and he says someone needs to be fired at Caltrans. It was wrong. It was not done properly. Elliott is a 35-year resident of Descanso, and he's also been a member of the community planning group for 30 years, and he's owned the Descanso Trading Post since 1991. He says in all that time they've been asking for a reduced speed limit, but not fewer parking spaces. Tammy Cooker has owned Descanso Junction Restaurant with her husband Brett since 2003. They had to cancel their annual Halloween party because Caltrans was doing the work at the time, painting stripes in front of their business. She asked that they put off the work for just a couple of days so they wouldn't have to cancel the party, but Caltrans refused. Now, she says, the new parking situation is affecting business because people can't figure out how to park. It's confusing. There are several other ways they could have handled this. The junction does have some parking in back, but other businesses don't have that option, and they're worried about losing customers. Cooker and Elliott are also concerned that Caltrans left no handicap parking spaces, so they are afraid they could be sued for violating the Americans with Disabilities Act. They requested the speed limit be posted at 35 miles an hour, have a crosswalk painted on the highway, and a traffic signal or a stop sign installed. But that has not been done. More changes are possible, however. Hunter says Caltrans is proceeding with the community's request to evaluate a potential three-way stop at the intersection of State Route 79 and Riverside Drive. Caltrans is also in communication with state and local officials on potential long-term suggestions or improvements, such as a three-way stop evaluation and relinquishing the highway altogether. Elliott, the Descanso Trading Post owner, says that no consideration was made by Caltrans regarding pedestrian traffic in the area. He says there are no crosswalks, warning signs, sidewalks, or any other pedestrian safety actions that Caltrans has done to protect pedestrians. The only apparent action is to eliminate pedestrians by putting the local businesses out of business. No businesses, no pedestrians, he says. Connie Navarez, whose two daughters were the teenagers hit by a car back in 2021, raised concerns on social media recently about the changes. She claims Caltrans is retaliating against her family for the lawsuit and causing retribution by her Descanso neighbors. She says her house has been vandalized and damaged, causing her heavy anxiety. Navarez says it's like Caltrans is trying to create a lynch mob. What Caltrans is doing is creating unsafe roadway conditions that will ultimately lead to another accident, injury, or death. Her daughters' lives have been permanently altered with lifelong disabilities, with both needing daily assistance as adults. The Caltrans changes are personal to her. She says, I have a responsibility to this community. The community stood up for my family against everyone. They held me together. If it wasn't for them, I might not still have my home. I might not still have my daughters. Navarez's attorney issued a letter to the community in October in an effort to quell rumors spreading around Descanso, blaming her for the changes. The letter contends that Caltrans claimed the modifications were due to a court order issued related to his client's lawsuit. However, the attorney's letter states that the lawsuit did not result in any judicial order mandating roadway redesign, parking reconfiguration, or signage installation. Many in the Descanso community vow to continue the fight. The issue is on the December agenda for the San Diego County Traffic Advisory Committee meeting. Community members are working with the offices of State Senator Brian Jones, Assemblymember Carl DeMaio, and County Supervisor Joel Anderson's staff. They have also reached out to Congressman Daryl Issa about the lack of ADA parking. Descanso Junction's owner Tammy Cooker promises it's not a dead issue yet. Reporting for East County Magazine from Descanso on KNSJ, the network for social justice based in Descanso, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Grossmont Healthcare District has a new chief executive officer. Santee resident James Sly was unanimously approved by the district's five-member board to lead the organization starting November 15th. Sly, who has been the CEO of the East County Economic Development Council since December 2020, will have a salary of $270,000 a year as Grossmont Healthcare District's CEO. Aaron Bizak, who has been the interim CEO for the Grossmont Healthcare District since March 2025, will stay on as a communications strategy consultant for the Grossmont Healthcare District. A press release from the district states that Sly was selected following an exhaustive multi-month recruitment process that drew nearly 500 applicants from across the country. The process involved multiple rounds of interviews with dozens of highly qualified candidates before the board approved Sly's appointment. Grossmont Board President Bob Ayers says Sly brings, quote, the perfect blend of strategic vision, community insight, and leadership experience to guide the district into its next chapter. Ayers said Sly has been a valued partner to the healthcare district for years, helping us expand healthcare access and workforce opportunities. Before serving as CEO of the East County Economic Development Council, Sly served as the group's vice president and chief operating officer. He also helped launch the East County Small Business Development Center and previously worked in the aerospace industry and for a consulting group managing large-scale workforce and public service programs. He currently serves on more than a dozen local and regional boards, including the San Diego County Regional Airport Authority, SANDAG, the World Trade Center San Diego, and both the East County and Santee Chambers of Commerce. He previously worked as a management consultant and a workforce expert for programs including the One Stop Career Center Network and San Diego's CalWORKS Welfare to Work and Refugee Resettlement Programs. A West Hills alumni, Sly holds an MBA from Western Governors University a bachelor's degree in business management and administration from San Diego State University, and a not-for-profit management certificate from Harvard Business School. Sly says he's honored to lead the Grossmont Healthcare District and continue its legacy of serving East County residents. Having partnered with Grossmont District for many years, he says, I've seen firsthand the district's impact on improving health access, supporting community wellness, and fostering the next generation of healthcare professionals. I look forward to building on that foundation and advancing our shared mission. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
The County of San Diego's Planning and Development Services is inviting all Lakeside residents and community stakeholders to a public meeting to discuss local transportation needs and potential solutions. The meeting is set for Tuesday, November 18th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Lakeside Community Center. It's part of the Lakeside Mobility Options via Efficient Solutions, or MOVES, program, a component of the county's broader community-based transportation program. The initiative aims to collaboratively identify transportation challenges, needs, and opportunities in the local community. The resulting Lakeside MOVES plan will serve as a guiding vision to enhance transportation options and accessibility throughout the Lakeside focus area. The ultimate goals are to improve mobility, safety, and connectivity for all modes of transportation. The public meeting on November 18th will provide an opportunity for community members to review and offer input on the project's goals, existing transportation conditions, and potential future improvements and programs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. When most of us think about Thanksgiving, images of turkey, stuffing, and time spent with loved ones typically comes to mind, not fire hazards. However, an increased risk of fire is, in fact, a reality of Thanksgiving, reminds Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna. According to the National Fire Protection Association, three times as many home-cooked fires occur on Thanksgiving as on a typical day. Unattended cooking is the leading cause of home-cooking fires. So here are the National Fire Protection Association's top five tips for cooking with fire safety in mind on Thanksgiving and beyond. Stay in the kitchen while you're cooking and keep a close eye on what you fry. Always stay in the kitchen while frying, grilling, or broiling food. If you do have to leave the kitchen for even a short period of time, turn off the stove. Regularly check on food that's simmering, baking, or roasting, and use a timer to remind you when it's done. Keep things that can catch fire, such as oven mitts, wooden utensils, food packaging, towels, and curtains, away from your cooking area. Be alert when cooking. If you're asleep, don't use the stove or the stovetop. If you do have a small grease cooking fire on the stovetop and decide to fight the fire, smother the flames by sliding a lid over the pan and turning off the burner. Leave the pan covered until it is completely cooled. For an oven fire, turn off the heat and keep the door closed. If you're cooking a turkey using a disposable aluminum pan, consider doubling up and using two pans to avoid a puncture, since dripping turkey juices, while delicious, can also cause an oven fire. Stay safe and have a happy Thanksgiving. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A judge has set bail at $1.5 million for Danny Corcus, a 35-year-old El Cajon man who fled the scene after hitting a 12-year-old boy with his SUV, causing serious injury. The boy was in a coma initially from a head injury and also suffered other injuries requiring surgery. El Cajon police used license plate reading technology to find the SUV driven by Corcus, which was parked outside his family's business, Lakeside Smoke Shop. According to Deputy District Attorney Natalie Schofield, surveillance video indicates Corcus was aware he had hit someone. After his arrest, Corcus was initially released on a lower bail, but he failed to show up at an October 28th court hearing on a separate charge of evading police back in July. He'd been charged with reckless driving in July and again in August before the October 22nd accident on Ballantyne Street that seriously injured the 12-year-old in El Cajon. Corcus now faces additional charges, including felony hit and run. He has pleaded not guilty. Judge Peter Lynch rebuked Corcus during a hearing on November 1st for his pattern of reckless driving, evading police, and ultimately injuring a child. The judge noted that all of that could have been avoided if he simply followed the traffic laws that everybody is supposed to do. Judge Lynch set the hefty $1.5 million bail, calling the defendant clearly dangerous.
Twenty-seven years after her body was found partially decomposed in a ravine off Avocado in El Cajon, Alicia Ledesma Sanchez has been identified as the homicide victim thanks to a match to DNA provided by her son. The case is a testament to the persistence of El Cajon Police Department's detectives and the department's volunteer cold case unit, which persevered over decades to solve the case. When found on August 13, 1998, beneath heavy shrubbery in the ravine, Sanchez had no identification and police were unable to identify her. She was believed to have been dead for about 6 weeks. In 2003, the death case was re-examined by the Cold Case Homicide Unit of the El Cajon Police Department. The victim's skull was retrieved and sent to a forensic artist who completed a forensic sculpture. Photographs of the sculpture were released in hopes that a member of the public could assist in identifying the woman. However, no viable leads were developed and the case remained cold. In 2008, DNA was obtained from the decedent and a DNA profile was developed, but unfortunately, there were no DNA matches in the database. Over 2 years, beginning in 2023, members of the ECPD Volunteer Cold Case Unit worked with labs to conduct genetic, genealogy, and phenotyping, advanced DNA techniques to reveal human characteristics and potential family members. In August, the El Cajon Police Department posted the victim's story on the department's social media pages, asking the public for help. The volunteer cold case unit was contacted by a potential family member who believed she knew the woman's identity. A DNA test with the son of the deceased woman confirmed in a familial match, providing identification 27 years later. The homicide remains under investigation and no suspect has yet been named. If you have any information about Alicia Ledesma Sanchez or knowledge of her death, please contact the El Cajon Police Department's Investigation Division at 619-579-3320 or email the Volunteer Cold Case Unit at coldcaseunit@elcajon.gov. Alternatively, tips can be shared anonymously through Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 or online at sdcrimestoppers.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Heidi Hope.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.